It's the Puppet Parent Podcast. Hey everyone, in this episode we'll talk about moving again, Z's organizing and cleaning tips, a brief history of The Lion King, and Z's review of Disney's Bambi. Yeah, it's all coming up next on the Puppet Parent Podcast. How's it going, everyone?
Hi, everybody. We are the Puppet Parent Podcast. My name is Z.
My name is Chad.
We are parents. We are puppeteers, and we have a podcast. Mm-hmm. We've been doing these podcast episodes ever since the week of March 17th, and we will be continuing to do them weekly until we feel like it's time to wrap it up. But yeah. We're in this for the long haul with all of you, you can watch our journey in all of these episodes that we've been providing weekly on Sundays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
Recording live. That's right. Live. On Facebook, on YouTube. What up, everybody? So facebook.com/wondersparkpuppets, FYI. Hey there, Jenny Rogers. Good to see you, too.
Yes, we are always appreciative of all the people in chat who tune in and watch the podcast live and interact with us that way as well. How you doing, Chad?
I'm okay. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay.
It's okay to just be okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's been... I don't know that my high alert system can handle any more alerting. I feel like I'm high alerted out. Mm. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, I actually really like this feeling of being like in duress sometimes, because then I go into action mode and my action mode is like, I can do it. I'm a superhero. I got this. Woo. And then I get it all done. It's like reminiscent almost of like being at the hot dog stand when I used to work there, or the bakery, and we were like slammed, and I'd be like, yes, my superhero powers of multitasking will come out right now. I can do the soup and the bread and check you out and get you your order. And it's all going to be amazing. But I will tell you that that has a window of time, and I think my window of time might have been 6 months for this amount of intensity, because I definitely felt like I hit a bit of a wall this week, and as far as like just everything being so stressful. Although I watched Saturday Night Live last night, and that helped.
Oh, was it funny?
Oh, so funny. Yes, I wasn't sure how they were going to handle it. Like, you know, it's a bit delicate right now, but I felt like they did a great job. Oh, so good. Alec Baldwin was Trump, and Jim Carrey was Joe Biden, and right. Jim Carrey is Joe Biden.
Well, he's amazing.
He's a master, man. He's so talented. Jim Carrey, not that you're ever going to watch this, but if you are watching this, I'm a fan. Huge fan. Like, huge. You're so funny. You're so funny and just so good. Like, it's not just him about him being funny. Like, he just embodies the character in such a theatrical way. He's so theatrical. Mm-hmm. And as a theater person, I love it. I love it. I love everything he's ever done. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure. Yeah. I don't know that I've seen the full canon, but everything that I've seen.
People are looking back at the first Ace Ventura movie, and they're like, that's really problematic.
What?
Trans murderer killer in it, and is this whole, most of the plot is like, she's a man, and you know, so it's we really yucked it up about that stuff way back in the day, the 1990s.
It was a different time.
Times have changed. So
it was a different time.
No, comedy, as we learned, mm-hmm. comedy has a freshness date. You know, people are saying this now, especially with cancel culture being such a big thing. It's like, yo, if you dug up something that one of these presidential candidates said 30 years ago, maybe that's not fair because, you know, things were different back then. But, you know, dig up something they said like last week or a couple months ago, because that's relevant.
People evolve, you know. But anyway, Jim Carrey's Joe Biden, amazing. If anybody hasn't seen it yet, the opening skit of the debate, it was just amazing. And I don't know who was playing, because I'm not good with names. I just know those two names, really, and like Kate McKinnon. Okay. Molly Rudolph's my friend. Maya, what's her face, played Kamala Harris. Maya Rudolph, is that her name?
I have no idea.
Okay, anyway, Sorry. She played Kamala Harris, and she was amazing. Oh my gosh, so funny. And then whoever was the moderator, I don't know your name, but you were so good too. It was just great. And I really needed that laugh. And so thank you to SNL and for everybody who, you know, made so many different accommodations. I can only imagine, like, what that set must have felt like to, like, be able to be back and to be doing the thing that you love to do. Because I know so many artists and theater people are like, oh, all we want to do is do the thing that we do.
Yeah, right? So many people, backstage people,
yeah,
you know, are like, hey, man, we can't. Nobody cares if we do a Zoom thing. We're not going to do a Zoom thing. We just want to
do the thing that we do.
We just want to pull on some pulleys.
Right.
And tell people where to stand. And, right. You know.
And quickly move things on and off. That's what we do.
Yeah.
I know. So it was really like a gift to get to see SNL last night. And if you haven't seen it, make sure you check it out. So that helped a little bit.
Yeah. But you guys were... I got a little cranky last night because I woke up and it was past midnight. And you and Grandma were yucking it up, and the TV was on, and I couldn't close the door because the cat might need to pee. And so I decided to go back downstairs. So we moved this weekend. We moved from the basement to the attic, basically.
The lofted floor space.
We went from like what felt like our own apartment in like the basement of a house to like the like we say lofted floor space of like the living room. So it's like
the two bedrooms that overlook the living room.
We're in there with the TV basically. If you can close your door, it's like a little bit of a respite, but it's like you're part of the main room area now. So it's just gonna take a little while to get used to that because when you walk downstairs, it was like you can't hear much. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you're in your own world. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of mourning the our old living space. Even though we're in the same building, it's just different. And we've been moving for a long time. Like we moved for like a month.
Well,
you know,
it
like
was
little steps here and there.
Yeah,
you know,
we knew we were gonna. Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks, Marika. I love this scarf too. We knew we were going to move for over a month, and so we've been slowly getting the kids' bedroom ready. Like taking all the toys out of there because we really don't want a lot of toys in their bedroom because that's their sleeping space. And but they could have books in there. So we were moving. I organized all of my mother-in-law's books. She used to be a kindergarten teacher for most of her career. So she's got children's books all over the house, but like so many doubles and even some triples and quadruples of books.
Wow, and her husband is the same with DVDs of action movies.
So I organized all of the books and then found all the doubles, showed her the doubles, let her pick out which ones to keep and stuff. And I just finished that project this morning. So that was like a week long project almost because I started the night of the debate. It gave me something to focus on while the madness was happening.
Yeah, were you channeling Niecy Nash during that time?
You know what?
Open your
eyes. I do love Niecy Nash's. I don't remember. Clean House, was that what it was called?
Something.
Yeah, that was a great show. That one started me on the path of recovery from being a very messy person. But the thing that really has helped me is this podcast called. Oh my gosh, I can't think of the name of it. A Slob Comes Clean.
Yeah.
A Slob Comes Clean. And I love this podcast so much. And it's really helped me in a huge way to really make progress, especially because we live in New York City in a very small two-bedroom apartment. And so this process of going through everything has to happen at least four times a year, because if not, things just accumulate. And
there's no room. And when we moved out here, we took very little. I mean, it felt like all the essentials, and we were taking like, wow, we took all our puppet shows out, but it still felt like there's this entire apartment of stuff behind. So even though like we're very careful about what we bring in, it just feels like, oh man, when we actually clean that place out, it's gonna be like
there's gonna be a lot of things
yeah.
But and you know, I was very conscious to not really mess with much stuff while we were there over the summer. Mm-hmm. But now that it seems like we're going to be extending our stay longer and longer, I don't know. There was just little things like I helped them in the kitchen organize their pots and pans. I got a pots and pans organizer that pulls out so that, you know, you can stack them, and then because they were constantly falling, it was just this. And every time that somebody would open it, it would be like, ah, you know, like somebody would complain about it. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna do that.
So it was an empty cabinet space, but yeah, like 2x2
and deep. It was very deep,
and you just throw stuff in, like pots and pans are just stacked in
it
there.
It was one of those situations where you throw it in, close real quick.
Yeah, and it was never fully closed. Because there's always like a handle sticking out.
Something, yeah.
Yeah.
So for your parents' anniversary, while they were at church one day, I had bought a two-tiered roll-out shelving unit. So yeah. And then it's very nice, and it has like a stacking lids section and everything. So, but that was like the one thing that I did. Oh, and I cleaned the junk drawer. And then I was like, I'm not allowed to do anything else because it's not my house.
Well, but Laura, you didn't cross the boundary.
You
didn't go into their room.
Oh, no, like no. That's their private space.
Well, no, it more than that. It's like, that's like the real, like, you think it looks bad in certain rooms, but then you're like, oh, no, just wait until you've seen the bedroom.
I think everybody's allowed to have one room like that if that's what they want. Mm-hmm. But then we've continued to live in the house, and since we were moving too, and you know, you start to begin to see like the same areas of the house constantly a lot, and mm-hmm. you start to think about things. So like we rearranged the basement a bit, or I rearranged the basement.
What'd you rearrange? I mean, I moved the toys.
I moved the bookshelf.
Yeah.
Over. I made a reading nook. I moved the Lego table over. Mm-hmm. Now we need to get two lights for those spaces, and
yes.
because they're not really, it's very dark down in the basement, so.
Well, it's a man cave.
Mm-hmm. And then the books are all organized now, and
yeah.
I don't know, it just feels nicer, like, since we're having to see these spaces all the time, it's just, like, nice to have them look nice.
Yeah. I agree, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, I think the changes that we made were minute. We stayed out of their room, which I said that, like, her bedroom's kind of like a mess because, like, it's just always been that way. Like, she has like a ton of stuff somewhere, and this time it wasn't in the basement. It's in their room. They have a walk-in closet that's completely full. Like, you can't put anything on the racks because they just have all these old clothes from the 80s and 90s. And my dad has like 30, you know, suit coats. Or like, what do you call it? The part
suit jacket.
Suit jacket. Thank you. Yeah. But it's just, you know, like many puppeteers can relate. You hang on to a bunch of stuff, thinking that mm-hmm. you'll use them someday. Teachers the same way, and then eventually either you do or somebody comes along and helps you throw out some of it.
Just
a
little bit. So yesterday, me and your mom, I felt like it was a point of, like, again, leveling up in our relationship, that she trusted me enough to let me help her organize her crafts and manipulatives area for the kids' school stuff.
Yeah.
Because it was, like, leaching out from where it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be here, but then it went into your dad's office space, and then it was, like, not just on the shelf in the office, but then on the floor, and then, like, encroaching into his area where he was sitting.
It was just piles. And,
yeah,
piles, of
piles
stuff.
And piles. And so, again, I cannot sing the praises of that podcast enough, A Slob Comes Clean. It really has helped me to understand, like, how to deal with it, you know? And,
yeah.
And like, well, what are you using? She has all of these, like, simple ways. And her brain works like my brain, which is keep it all. Keep it all. Well, it's handy. We'll use it. Or we don't want to have to pay for it again. I already bought it. But
yeah.
You know what?
10 years ago.
Yes. So she's very rational about how she's come to terms with, like, her situation and how she, how really, like, did you even know that you had this thing?
Right.
And if you did, where would you look for it first? Not where should it be, but where would you look for it first? That's where it should live.
Yeah.
And
that's smart.
Yeah, like lots of little things like that. And then putting like with like. And, you know, like when you actually look and see how many bottle caps you have for making things out of, do you really need 100 or could you get by with 30? You know,
right? Like the project that isn't even there yet but you're thinking about it maybe.
Someday there might be something that comes along.
Yeah.
That you would need 100 bottle caps for that haven't been used yet.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, just things like that where once you see it all in the aggregate of all of the same things that you have, it becomes sometimes a little easier if you can say to yourself, all right, I'm allowed to keep 6, right? I have 20. I can keep 6. Mm-hmm. And then it, you know, you're allowing yourself the gift of getting to keep some of it, but then also the gift of acquiring more space. And it's hard, but in the end it's actually really nice. And I've heard your mom comment now a couple times to your dad saying, "Doesn't it look so nice?"
That's great. So, that's the test right there.
Yeah. So that was really good, and I really appreciated that she trusted me so much, cuz I was definitely, there were a couple big changes that we did about where things were going to get stored, cuz she wanted, you know, like the mats that we have to use with the kids on the table.
Yeah.
She has these placemats that the kids have to use on the Amish kitchen table so they don't mark it. Makes sense. Okay. Oh, they've always been stored in a heap in your dad's office.
Yes.
And I said, let's move them out of the office, because now that we have the internet, your dad's on that computer way more, and he's going to be in and out of Zoom meetings. You don't want to like have to go in there as much as possible. You want to let that be his space. So can we find a space out here? Ooh, that was like a big, you know, moment. But then we found a space that it was like a good compromise of where they could live. So little That's things great. Like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Yeah. So I don't mean to talk so much about organizing, but that was a lot of my time. And I think that that's how I'm dealing with the stress, honestly.
Z, I think you just pitched yourself to our listening audience.
I can help you. I understand. I do. I have struggled with keeping way too much stuff, way too much sentimental stuff for a very long time. But really, it's not me. It's all Dana K. White and that podcast. So if you want some inspiration, you should listen to her. I'm even like a Patreon member of her just because she's helped me so much.
That's so funny. As soon as, like, it's so funny that her name is Dana White, because that is a very famous name. Did you know? Dana White is also the name of a man who owns UFC.
Oh.
Who's a very famous personality.
Maybe that's why she goes by Dana K. White.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. But anyway, she's great. And I highly recommend that podcast. So
A Slob Comes Clean.
Yes, it was life-changing for me, and I still listen to it sometimes when I feel like I need a fix.
I feel like the home improvement, home rehab, shopping for home channels are on in the living room in this house all the time, but it never like rubs off.
Well, no, because all of that is easy because you're not going through stuff, sentimental items. The shows that aren't on is like... There are shows that aren't like hoarding buried alive. There is somewhere in between where you haven't gone like total extreme, but you know, you haven't dealt with like some stuff that's maybe needs to be dealt with in order for you to reclaim certain aspects of your house, or you know, like what we did, which is realize that there are furniture pieces that just had stuffed animals on them that are a beautiful shelving unit that could be utilized as a shelving unit. So that's what we ended up doing is, you know, just doing some stuff like that. But but I'm very, very aware. I think because of my upbringing, I'm always nervous that somebody's going to yell at me or be upset about any kind of change that we're trying to take over, or that we're... you know, imposing ourselves into someone else's life. And so I didn't do anything for a long time, but now I feel like, well, if it's okay with you guys, can I do this? And then they say yes, and then I do it, and then they say thank you. So
that's probably perfect that we waited so long. You know, we didn't just come in and muscle our way in and change everything. And we're still not changing, and we're just making it a little nicer. And we moved all of our stuff upstairs, you know, we're in different spaces now, and to do that things had to get reorganized. Mm-hmm. So it was more just like, we're doing what you need, you know, which is like we moved upstairs like you wanted.
Yeah.
So in order for that to happen, we didn't have to sit down with them and have a meeting, we just did it, you know, because we're capable, and then they trust us as organizers. My dad is always saying that we pack our car, our like sports wagon, like a game of Tetris.
Yeah.
And basically we have to, because there's no other possible way to bring stuff back and forth, because
I think it's also just a symptom of living in New York City, though, too, yeah. Because I think that I never would have seen a room before and thought, well, you need shelves. Mm-hmm. But now I look at a room and I think, well, there's a lot of space that's up high that could be utilized, you know, and storage options that I wouldn't have thought of before, things like that. Yeah. But yeah, that's been nice. And like, I just finished the book project, so that's good.
What's the book project?
You know, sorting all your mom's kids' books.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so she had piles of books. She just took all the books out of where they were and just put them in big piles and reorganized them.
Well, I had a system.
Yeah, you know, a system, but it's like to see them just out in massive piles instead of just where they are. Like, you kind of like become blind to your own stuff. If you never use it and it's just there, it just becomes this background blur. So to actually mm-hmm. see it again, I feel like made it real.
Well, and that's why I said to her, like, what do you want to have access to? Because she never goes downstairs, and a lot of the books are downstairs. So I said, well, what do you want to be able to have access to? And she wasn't sure. So then I said, well, okay, how about we make sure that you have a lot of the social emotional stuff up here, nonfiction stuff up here. We'll have some fiction, but the kids are going to bring that up regardless. That's the stuff that they're going to, you know, be drawn to. But the things that mm-hmm. you might want for teaching moments, let's have those things up here. And then she also has a lot of books paired with toys in Ziploc bags, and nobody was touching those because it's like, it just feels like, I don't understand what this is, you know, and it doesn't look approachable the way that it's stored. It doesn't look fun. It doesn't look interesting. It looks like somebody's old stuff stuffed into a bag. So I brought all those Ziploc bags up and put them into a bin and said, like, you should look through these, make sure that they're sorted the way you want, and that way, and then you can be the one to introduce them to the kids, because they're not going to use them on their own, and I know that you yeah. want them to be used. So just having her think about things like that, like, how do I want to use something, mm-hmm. and how can I make sure that it's being used? And what's funny, too, is that I feel like us being here gives her an excuse to to hand things off, to not have to make the choice of recycling or keeping, because she'll be like, here's 20 toilet paper tubes, you know?
I mean, and we'll say, like, okay, we'll take them. We've been using them.
We do, and it's very, very sweet of her to help us, like, with that. But it's also, like, I think that she enjoys the collection. The art of the collection. I mean, I have that bug too, so I get it. It's like, oh, another cereal box.
Yeah.
There you go.
We were kind of wondering because, you know, like the first couple toilet paper tubes were like, okay, great. Awesome. Right? But then it seemed like she was giving me one like every day.
How are they going through that much toilet paper?
Yeah. And so now I think my theory is not that they go through an entire roll of toilet paper, although the toilet paper in this house is extremely thin. No, it's more, I feel like it's more like, she has been collecting toilet paper tubes for years and just giving me one a day. Just giving me one out of her massive pile.
She has a whole bin of them.
I think
somewhere
so.
In I'm her bedroom.
Pretty sure. And they're picked clean of any glue or paper or anything, but they're not so... Because I bought toilet paper tubes online just to have, you know, for projects. They're not completely clean, like a fresh one, you know, so they've been used.
But saved.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Saved.
You think.
I'm just like, this is from like 2005, this one. And they're white, too. They're always white.
Well,
they're
I think she
brown.
Always gets the same kind.
I guess so.
By the way, can I just complain for a moment about the toilet paper that's in the upstairs bathroom?
Yes.
Not that you guys need to know about
complain
this.
Complain away.
That toilet paper is the worst, the worst. And I've been trying to figure out, like, why is this toilet paper the worst? Like, and it's the worst because you just pull on it for a second and it
yes.
just shreds.
It's like,
shreds
it's like a
in
mummy.
Your hand.
It's like, a it's like the mummy wraps just like, disintegrate
like,
when you touch
like
it.
Like, literally, like, poof, like gone. And you if you use it, it just shreds. I mean, it's
yes.
just like the worst. And I think... That toilet paper roll somehow got wet at one point and then dried. And then that's my theory.
Yeah.
Because it's so bad. I think we should just throw it out.
Yeah. No, you know what I've been using because what I do is in the morning, it's 5 a.m., it's dark, and the cat is meowing. The cat wants to eat. So I have to go over to the cat's dish. Pick up, it's like a double food and water plastic dish thingy. Go over, then I grab some toilet paper, and every time it's just like I gotta bat at it a little bit to get like a few sheets down, and then grab that, and then scoop out the contents into the toilet because you don't want that stinking up the bathroom garbage, you know?
And we're upstairs, so taking it all the way downstairs then back upstairs is too much.
That's not going to work. And I don't want her following me or meowing. Like, we'll get into that. But, no, I just, like, dump it into the toilets, you know, and then flock that out. And then I take a tissue because it can actually won't disintegrate in my hand and then get the rest of the crust around.
Like a Kleenex?
Yeah, like an actual tissue. And, like, scrape the rest out of there and go over to the sink and wash it out, you know, but, like...
It's just so funny. Like, these are the things that, we are day-to-day, like, things. I mean, this is what happens when you live in somebody else's house. It's like, okay, like, you know, you deal with that for, like, a week or two, no big deal. It's been 6 months. No, it hasn't been 6 months. It's been four months of dealing with
month number five
toilet paper that we would not have purchased ourselves.
Yes.
And
we are fine.
And we're fine. But it's just a funny thing. It's like when you think about, like, what's, you know, what are the things that are giving me, like, these little pangs of, like, I miss home, you know? And it's just funny to me that, like, one of the things is, like, I'm annoyed by the toilet paper.
Yeah.
But just the toilet paper in that bathroom, because I think it had some trauma of some sort.
So I did find a box of Kleenex tissues.
Yeah.
Like way above the cabinets downstairs.
Oh, I put that up there, yeah.
I brought it down and I noticed that it had been like soaked probably 10 years ago.
Oh, no.
And I just like, you know what?
And kept.
Here we go. Yep. And we used them. We used them all. And I recycled that box. It was just kind of falling apart. But the tissues were mostly okay. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been mummified.
Well, my new thing this week, you want to hear what I'm going to start doing?
Yes. What's your new
project? I'm not
going to
touch that. Project? Sorry. I touched the buttons down here.
I bet we could.
Ooh.
Look at that.
Don't touch the buttons.
Anyway.
Camera one, camera two.
Yeah, that's right.
I have uncovered the treadmill from the book project because the treadmill is helping me with the book project.
Really,
and now that the kids
are
not sleeping downstairs, I can try to start jogging at night a little bit on the treadmill. And I've never had a jogging regimen, so we'll see how that goes. But I'm going to try. I'm going to try because I'm not getting the kind of physical activity that I normally would get in the city because I walked a lot. I did a lot of stairs in the city, and I'm just not doing that as much out here. And I'm starting to feel a little lumpy.
Yeah,
so,
and I'd suggested the driveway because it's really long, getting the mail. And no, you wanna sit inside in the climate controlled basement.
Yes, I do.
On a treadmill.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
All right.
And listen to my podcast and not have the wind and rain.
That's a good idea. Listen to a podcast.
Yeah.
And keep walking until the podcast is over. Like, you gotta set a goal.
Well, my goal is 1 mile. Let's see how I do with 1 mile.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then, yeah, because you can tell on the thing, distance and everything. So I'm gonna go 1 mile and then do 1 mile for like a week, and then I'll up it to 2 miles. Because that's what I used to do at home, was I was walking sometimes 4 miles a day, you know, 2 miles to work and 2 miles back. And now I don't get any of that. So, you know, and if I can start going at a little faster pace, then those miles will go by faster.
You should watch a video on your phone when you do it. That's my recommendation to you.
Okay.
Anything to get your mind off of, like, people who say that other people who go to the gym without headphones or their phone or anything are crazy. All you can think about while you're working out is pain. or how boring it is, or any other, like, the myriad of terrible things about the gym. You just need to be, like, in the zone. Music or video or you got to have something.
Well, I do. I'm excited to start watching The Good Place again because I never got to watch many episodes of it. I only watched, like, the first 3 or 4 episodes, and I really liked it. I know I'm, like, totally decades behind on series and, like, what's good. Everybody's excited about Schitt's Creek, so I want to watch that too. But I want to finish watching The Good Place and then watch something else.
Yeah, let me know. Let me know how it goes.
I will.
We watched one episode together, and I was like, wow, this is really obvious to see where this is going, and how many seasons are they in? You know, it's probably the same actors.
I guess I'm super gullible, because I'm just like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen.
You know what I love about
About me? Were you going to say what you love about me?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, is that you're cool with us, you know, trying something and then being cool with me like, "Nah, I'm good." Like, I didn't watch Bambi with you guys the other night. Our child picked Bambi as a movie, which, like, Poltergeist was rated PG when it came out. I think Bambi being rating anything but, like, teens is a shame, and shame on you.
I will say I watched it with them. I don't know that I've ever watched Bambi all the way through, and we gave them a heads up. We said, "There's a very sad part. Are you sure you want to watch it?" "Yes, we're sure." "Oh, it's very sad." "Yeah, we want to watch it." "Okay." It was beautiful. You know what? I will say, I don't know that I've ever actually fully watched Bambi all the way through, and I thought it was just lovely. And I know. I'll take all the flack right now. There were some sad moments, and it was a little intense, but it wasn't as intense as I thought it was going to be. And maybe that's because I already knew what was going to happen or something, but I really thought it was going to be more intense, because I even remember watching, like, a deconstruction of, like, the worst scenes in Bambi or something like that, or the worst scenes in Disney and, like, that. Like,
yeah, the quail scene.
Right.
The quail scene.
So, out of context, the quail scene is, like, very horrible. It's like, oh. But
we see a character.
In the midst of the movie, it doesn't feel that bad. And I don't know what that's about. Maybe, you know what? Maybe I'll just blame everything on the pandemic.
There you go.
Maybe it's that everything is so stressful in my life and everybody's life, and everything is so uncertain that makes the movie Bambi feel like a walk in the park. It is a walk in the park.
That I guess that has to be, because, I mean, they kill off, you know, like, other characters in other Disney movies, you know? In Lion King, well, you know, they kill off Simba's dad.
They did a whole retrospective with a lot of important people from Disney, and the only one, of course, that I can remember is John Lasseter. But they do a comparison of how they really drew from Bambi to make Lion King. And that they there's so many moments from The Lion King that are shout-outs to Bambi, which I didn't even realize.
I don't trust a thing anyone on that team says about The Lion King at all. At all. Because they never... They never owned up to stealing the entire movie, the characters, and the plot from Japan. From Osamu Tezuka!
Right, I know about that. But I was just saying...
Wholesale stealing, and then branding it as their own... the first... They had said... All the marketing material was...
I know.
Was the first original Disney story... And anybody who doesn't on the team who doesn't say otherwise, like, give me a break.
Okay, I know, I get that. You know what?
We looked at Bambi. This is from Bambi, wholeheartedly Bambi.
No, it's not from Bambi. But
I don't believe.
There's moments. There's moments. There's shout outs to, like, Bambi. There's very specific moments, like looking into the water, and there's like. No, there's the.
Let me just say, I've seen Lion King more than most humans on the planet. Like, there was a year of my high school life where I'd come home from high school and watch The Lion King and cry, and then that was like my, you know, and didn't do homework, at least 100 times.
Yep.
Looking into the water, straight from Kimba the White Lion, seeing the reflection turn into his father, Kimba the White Lion. Anyway, I'm sorry. I feel very passionately about this.
I can tell. Well, I really enjoyed watching Bambi in a way that I didn't expect to. I thought it was a beautiful film, very nonverbal. So if you want to see a movie that really tries to tell a story with as few words as possible, that's a wonderful example.
Here.
And are you going to help me?
I'm just going to help you a little bit. There you go.
Oh, I'm getting preened right now.
I was surprised that a mother would say that they like Bambi, because Bambi is like, you know, they kill off
dies.
A mom.
I know. No, it was a beautiful movie. I don't know what to say
and
about
it's,
it.
And
it's the story.
It's a story of a mom who gets murdered and a deadbeat dad.
So I don't feel that way about the movie. It felt more about, like, the story of animals and the forest. And I don't know. I just didn't. That's not my take. And I am allowed to have my own opinion about it.
I'm not saying at all that your opinion is wrong. I'm just flooding the airwaves with my opinion, which is on fire for some reason.
Yeah. Anyway, I was actually really happy to get to watch it. So
Leah, see, Marika agrees with me. The quail scene traumatized her as a child.
It is intense. Other people. It's intense. Don't fly.
We see the quail and she's having a panic attack because man is coming and they're like, don't fly, don't go out there, you're getting a bird. And she's like, no, we have to go, freaking out. And then she goes and gets murdered right in front of us.
Yes.
Killed in front of us.
Yes.
That character was alive a second ago and got shot dead.
I know, and it makes me very upset at hunters. Oof. Hunters.
Man.
And did they end up eating that quail? I don't know.
Did they eat Bambi's mom? Probably. So,
I don't know.
I was thinking this the other day because I was saying, okay, here's the only Disney movie where the character's parent is definitely gets killed, but it's probably also skinned and eaten. But then I was thinking, wait a second.
Jesus.
Did the hyenas also eat King Mufasa? Probably. Because I never thought about that before. What do they do with King Mufasa's body? Because then Scar and the hyenas
are in charge. Okay, so they probably, if we're going to talk about Disney also.
And had a party with like his bones and sinew.
I just want to say that the announcement that Disney was laying off like 28,000 people or something crazy like that made me sad.
Yes.
And I definitely went through a phase where I was like, Disney is evil. Because everybody was feeling like Disney's anti-Starbucks, anti-Walmart, anti-Disney, no corporation. And you know what? I have done a total like pivot on that feeling in the last like 5 or 6 years. I don't know if that's me becoming older and like just wanting to like regress to like my childhood or something, but I like Disney, and I like when they announced that they were laying off people, it made me feel sad and concerned, and I want to be able to go back to Disney World at some point. Like, honestly, when I am feeling like a lot of like sad feelings, I think to myself, at some point, this is all going to be over and we're all going to go to Disney World.
Oh my God. Jenny Rogers says they've never heard the Japanese story of Kimba the White Lion. All right. Google Kimba, K-I-M-B-A, the White Lion.
It's a Japanese animation. It was done by Osamu Tezuka, who also did Astro Boy.
He invented like anime, and
he was a big deal, and also made a couple of my favorite unicorn movies called Unico, which are very weird. I would not recommend them necessarily for young kids, but they're bizarre and I love them.
So the whole story was that Kimba the White Lion was a TV show, was I believe
are we gonna go through
first.
The whole thing?
I let you ramble about 20 minutes about cleaning things.
It's
give me
true.
My 5 all minutes.
Right,
thanks.
All right, take it. It's fine. Tell us all about Kimba.
So,
the White Lion.
Kimba the White Lion was a graphic novel series, you know, like manga from Japan. They got turned into an anime in the 70s. It's a terrible English dub where you can really see them just trying to like dub over terrible things that are happening, like characters dying but faking it, or the craziness. Dubs back then were way different. They were making, that company was making a feature-length Kimba movie when Disney announced, by the way, we got our own Lion movie and it's coming out soon. And the Japanese company was like, what? And I believe it's Toy, but I could be mistaken, the animation company. They didn't have the money to sue Disney. They looked at Disney and said, they have all this money, all the best lawyers, they're totally shamelessly ripping off our product and ruining any chances we have of our amazing motion picture doing any kind of money in foreign markets, but there's nothing we can do. And Lion King came out first, and Kimba came out second, and everybody called Kimba, which had been around for 40 years, a Lion King ripoff. And it's one of the greatest travesties and shames that, you know, that happened. And, you know, like,
is it okay
to
say
burnt out about it? Yes.
Shame on you, but then still enjoy both products?
I watched Lion King I don't know how many times. I'm a big fan of the Lion King, not so much the CGI remake. But let's acknowledge, people need to come out and say, we did horrible things. And we ruined Kimba the White Lion. And we hurt people's careers. And then we claimed that it was all original and it was a big old fib. Yeah. So anyway, Kimba the White Lion. It's actually really good.
Circle of Life. I don't know. I don't know what to say. Five finger discounts
is more like it. I don't know what to say, but they did a really good job with The Lion King.
It was beautiful to see Bambi, and it was beautiful to see the artwork. I honestly, that was one of the things too, is just the beauty in the painting. Mm-hmm. Like I've been more keyed into animation lately, especially with, like, I watched an episode of The Flintstones the other day that was on, and I have a greater understanding now of walk cycles. Like, I did work in stop motion animation, but I never thought a lot about cell animation before. And I was going to recommend cell vinyl paint to a friend of mine who was painting cranial helmets because she was looking for like a flexible non-flake paint. And I had used cell vinyl when I was working in stop motion animation. So I went to find the site. Turns out they don't make cell vinyl anymore in the States. And there's only one place that you can get this cell paint for painting animations. And I don't know. I've just been thinking more about it, and it's just so beautiful, the work that they did. It's beautiful. And, like, really, if you look at the Flintstones and you look at Disney, I mean, it's – but the care for the imagery and the movement is just so gorgeous.
All right, so –
like watching the, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I wasn't as interested in the story this time as I was in the art of it. And like watching Bambi walk.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was beautiful. It was just beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, they really took their time. They had money. The Flintstones made, just like Underdog, was made in a very cheaply and quickly.
I mean, I know, I understand you really can't compare, but yeah. It's like, as a kid, they were one and the same to me. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about it because I just liked the story, and I wasn't looking at like how many how many frames are they using to tell this moment, mm-hmm. or oh, it's the same frame, the only thing that's moving is their mouth, like, right. I can see how they cut corners now in a sense, whereas in Bambi it's like, oh, look, like it, the zoom in at the beginning, it takes a long time for anything to happen at the top of that movie. Mm-hmm. Even Leaf and Finn were like, it's taking a long time. Because you're like winding through the woods at this glacial pace. It is so slow.
But there's like a chorus of voices.
A little, but it's really, it's not like, that's later.
That's after the mom gets shot.
No.
Or was it before?
It's before.
Before.
April Showers is before.
What's the your mom's dead but everything's gonna be okay song?
That these little bluebirds are singing. Yep. And actually I had forgotten that happened right afterwards, and you know what? It did make you feel a little bit better. maybe I'm just like, I just need things to be better, and the bluebirds, and I'm like, you're right. It's going to be okay, Bluebirds.
Thanks, Bluebirds. Yay. Bluebirds keep singing. Bambi's like, my mom's still dead, Bluebirds. But then there's this weird time skip. I think it's the only Disney movie with a time skip, right?
A time skip?
Can you think about any other movie, Disney movie? Well, I guess Sleeping Beauty, big time skip. Time skip is where, like, time passes off screen and suddenly characters are older. Like Sleeping Beauty, it's like 16 years pass.
Oh, because we don't see a montage of some sort where they get older?
Yeah, suddenly it's like everyone's an adult and everyone is looking for love. And all the boys have mustaches.
I didn't notice that. But
Is this weird? I mean, like a, not like super pronounced, but it just feels like, did everyone get facial hair? I guess that's how you show they're older.
A little older.
They're all talking about the ladies.
Yeah. They're all saying they're not going to get Twitter pated, and then the ladies are all like, hey.
Yeah, and they all hook up by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And Thumper has kids, and the skunk has kids.
I thought it was so sweet.
Bambi has
kids. When I was a kid, I don't know, I thought it was sweet, and like the boys liked it, even with the sad parts. I said, so how did you like it? And Leaf said, I loved it. And Finn really liked it too. So, I don't know. Bambi.
No. I mean, like, you know, they can love it. And that's fine. I decided not to watch it with you guys.
Yeah.
I guess because I'm very particular. I was a Toonhead for a long time. I guess I still am. No, I did not feel like stressing out because I cry really easily in movies and stuff. And I knew it was going to make me cry, make me really upset. I just did not want to feel that way.
It's okay.
Because the mom and the dad is terrible. It's like, and there's your father King of the forest. Oh, hey, hello, father. Gallop away.
Jenny Rogers.
Where is he going?
To change the subject, Jenny Rogers, yes, we did play the pirate game. I'm meaning to tell you. Thank you. My brain is just like full of a million things all the time. Yes, and it's awesome. And thank you so, so much. And it's even more awesome because, Jenny sent us a game that her family has loved, the Piratopoly game. And we played it, and it's super fun. Cool. It is so fun. And especially my five-year-old loves any time that he gets to get up and, like, act out something as a pirate. So that part's super fun. So we've really enjoyed that. Thank you so, so much. It's so thoughtful of you to send that to us. And we've been, especially as winter is starting to set in, I think we're going to play more board games and, we're just really going to take it. We have a whole shelf now for board games. When we first came in June 1st, there were no board games at Grandma and Grandpa's house. And
we used to have board games, but we kind of board gamed out. One, because my dad never loses. Never. Never.
Okay.
He doesn't take it easy. And then number two, because kids cheat. And with four of us, four kids, it was like, you know, the older you got, the better you got at cheating, let's say. So the older kids, my brother, always cheated them Monopoly. And there's a lot of, back in the 80s when I was growing up, 90s too, there's a lot of just luck-based board games, no skill-based. So it's always just like, we play Risk, right? But Risk is just about the luck of the dice.
I think it's both. You, because there's some planning. I really loved the game Risk for a long time. So I think
you
there's
had some good luck.
There's some planning too. The strategy. There's strategy and luck. It's a combo deal.
It's all luck. I mean, you can have the best strategy in the world. If you get the wrong roll of the dice, man, it's not going to work out.
That's true. But anyway, we have a lot of really fun board games now. Finn's been really into doing these charade games, which has been fun, which ties into his theater classes at school that he's not getting right now. So But we love the Piratopoly game. Yeah. I just want to say it again because it was so great and so thoughtful. Thank you, Jenny. You are awesome.
Hey. I took a nap today because I had a terrible night sleeping. Yeah. And when I woke up, I could hear like Muzak happening. It was like a MIDI of like the 90s greatest hits and classical music. And I was like coming around, looking around like, okay, I don't see anything. And I came out and asked you guys like, hey, where's that music coming from? I'm like, oh, downstairs. So I went downstairs to investigate and the keyboard... that the used keyboard that come into our lives has like a demo button that just cycles through all the songs that are on there. And it has like little, the keys can light up to show you where to put your fingers to learn how to play the songs. But our five-year-old just has them cycling through playing all the music and he's just dancing, freestyle dancing with like no abandon and just like just going all out 100%, spinning, almost hitting his head into things, just like jumping and leaping. But the slow songs, he's like, you know, going slow, you know, and all these artful movements and stuff. And the fast one's just running around and he's just doing it by himself. And I went down there and, you know, took some video and watched him and clapped and stuff. And then went upstairs to eat. And then, well, like 10 minutes later, he comes up and he's like, if anybody wants to watch me dance, come on down now. But nobody would.
Doing an art class with Lee.
And everybody had stuff they were doing. So like, all right, I'm coming down. I'm going to watch you some more. But it was so fun that he's just like downstairs just jamming out to music. Just dancing all by himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And since he's an athlete, since he's ripped, he can do all kinds of things. I mean, he's doing like somersaults and spins and
I know.
This is really fun.
Yeah. It is really fun.
We've spent a lot of time together. We went out and built, we were working on Fort Number 1 and then we worked on Fort Number 2 because we were working on Fort Number 1, which is, he decided he wanted a fort one day, so we're like, okay, great, we'll go out in the woods, pick out a spot. When I screwed in some of these, we have this place called The Dump, which is Grandpa just left a bunch of building supplies out in the yard, which I did not think was a good idea until this summer, where Finn's just like, let's build something. Oh no, Ryan was like, let's build something like Fortnite, because he's older, our cousin Ryan. And then Finn was like, me too, let's build a fort. And so we scooped up stuff from the dump, walked out to the middle of the forest, way further out than we'd usually go. We have a campsite. It's not the campsite. It's in between trees, way out beyond the creek. We built an actual fort. It's kind of like a sukkah because we put in these huge, there's just dead trees everywhere. So we just like dead trees for the roof, slatted roof. And we've been building up the walls. And today he was like, let's work on fort number two. Because just like in whenever he plays Minecraft, he has like 50 different worlds. And if you go play with him, he'll make 51. You know, he always likes just starting from scratch and then just like making some kind of amazing creation from nothing. And so he picked out a new spot. And it was this, the other one was like planned out in between these trees. It looks like a cabin a little bit. And then this one is just like, he noticed some trees were like diagonal kind of coming out of the ground. And he's like, this is like a fort. So we've been building up around that. And then as we were going back, he was like, oh yeah, but I have fort number three and fort number four are next. So we're just spending a ton of time out in the woods. Yeah, our family has a few acres out in the woods, and their neighbors are tremendously just chill about like whatever, you know. And everybody owns like all these acres in the woods way out in western New York, and just have this shared wilderness area that people technically own parts of, but nobody really cares. As long as you don't go in between the crosshairs of their deer blind, then nobody really cares if you're on the property, I think. And there's like a big field next to it too, where like the deer like to hang out. You I scared some the deer. Meadow? God.
The meadow. I'm sorry.
The meadow.
Go to the thicket. Go to the thicket.
I'm triggering. Yeah, it's triggering me. So many people were screwed up by that movie. Because Bambi's mom wanders out and she's like, hmm? 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 Right?
It's safe, Bambi. Come on out.
Oh, God. You need to do the voice. Why does the movie not affect you? I'm surprised.
I don't know.
You just have a heart of stone.
No, I think it's just, I knew it was going to happen, so that's helpful.
Yes.
Because most of the time, even though you always can figure out what's going to happen, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Who
knew that Bambi's mom was going to die?
I couldn't even remember at the very beginning of the movie. I was like, is it his mom that dies or his dad? And then as the movie was going, I was like, oh no, I'm pretty sure it's his mom. Well, that's sad. And
then Bambi takes a slug in the guts.
He's
Bambi,
resilient,
Bambi
though.
Leaps
Feline
over.
Feline almost burns up. It's crazy. But they get reunited. It's all good.
Bambi takes a shot right
twins.
In the stomach.
They have twins. Baby twins. Anyway, Bambi's enough about Bambi.
Bambi's dad comes back and he's like, get up, Bambi.
Your mother like, can't be with you anymore.
And Bambi's like, I just got shot in the stomach, Dad. Where have you been my entire life? Get up, Bambi. Get up. You must get up, Bambi. He's like, I hate you, Dad. And then they somehow make it out alive. And he's like, peace out, son.
We don't know how animals relate to each other. I don't know why. It just didn't bother me. Anyway, what have we not talked about yet? The puppet company.
No, wait. Mm. We got more.
Oh?
We got more.
What?
Not only did we move upstairs, somebody came with us. Oh. That's right. The cat. Meow. The cat came with us.
Meow.
It's been so easy to keep the cat with us downstairs because you only have to close one door. There's one door that goes down to the basement apartment space. And you just have to keep that closed. And everybody's been really great about keeping it closed because there is a standard poodle who has a very aggressive prey instinct who lives in the first floor. And now we are in like a shared second floor, first floor situation with stairs.
It's like lofted bedrooms that like look over the living room space.
Yeah, and there's not much room up there. So our cat has, you know, on her own wandered down the stairs to come check it out, and we want to be in that place where she can just hang out with us because I want her to roam and don't want her to get bored and poop in our bed or something. So she has to get along with the dog. But the dog is like, his entire life has been encouraged or had just shown, because he's a hunting breed, to just like, if I see something out there, like, I'm growling or I'm chasing, you know.
But he doesn't attack. He doesn't attack. He just chases.
Yeah, but a cat can kill a dog like that. if like
a cat can kill a dog.
Excuse me. A dog can kill a cat like
that. Of course. Yes. No, no, no.
A standard
it's been
poodle
high stress, so.
Can kill a cat, and I don't want that to happen.
So, like, basically on the same day that we learned that the president had COVID, we moved our cat into a stressful situation. We moved ourselves into new bedrooms. We, like, I mean, it's just been, like, high anxiety. Poor kitty cat.
I know.
Poor dog. The dog has been doing a very good job overall.
Mostly, but it's hard. He's like whining because he would stand like a couple feet away. Because this morning, she decided she wasn't having anything of the dog, and she's just going to come down and sit with me on the couch because that's where she wants to be. And when the dog came over, she didn't run. She just sat there and was like, nope. And I was like, okay, good. She's claiming her territory. Cats are very territorial. Awesome. And when he got close, she hissed at him. Mm-hmm. And she's not a hissy cat. Mm-mm. At all.
Like, I've only heard her hiss like once or two other times in her life.
And it's when somebody stepped on her.
Mm-hmm.
Both times.
Right, right, right. She was like afraid that she was going to get hurt.
Yeah, so she hissed at him, but she's super chill otherwise. He's super chill otherwise too, but he really wants to get in there and sniff.
Like,
dogs are like have this thing where they have the greatest nose on the planet, but they just want to be right next to something as close as possible with the nose in it.
Yeah.
And because he can't do that, he's very frustrated. He's growled at her a couple times, and we're this place where like somebody needs to be with her if she's going to be downstairs and the dog's out.
It's just been a couple
of
days, though. So, your friend Jessica Perkins, who's a vet, she said time, you know, and a couple other people said eventually they'll become friends. So,
man, I hope so. Because I feel like it could happen.
I think that it could, too. I think it could, too.
But that is a big stressful thing because, you know, the idea that my parents' dog could kill our cat is like real.
Yeah.
And, you know, moving out of a space we were very comfortable in into this new space where like the TV is on all the time and it's right there. I couldn't deal with that last night. I had to leave the bed and go downstairs and sleep there. And having our cat be in danger is like new. And I think those are like, you know, those are just problems to solve, but it just stinks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? So anyway.
Well, Kamala Harris just texted me.
So. Oh, what? She like, hey, girl, I'm about to have some debates with the
VP. She wants to give me a call.
What?
She's giving a couple of supporters like you a call after debating Mike Pence. I want to personally thank you for being in this fight with Joe and me. Oh, she's going to call me.
What if it was like Santa, like a pre-recorded message?
Hi, I'm so happy to talk to you, Lindsay.
I did that.
Where the tone of how they say your name is like lower or weird in comparison to the rest of the sentence.
Oh yeah, do you remember Snakes on a Plane?
Oh yeah, you had that guy call me. What's his name?
That guy. I don't know. Sam Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Sam Jackson. They had this whole promotion for Snakes on a Plane, where they had a website where Sam Jackson pre-recorded a bunch of stuff and a bunch of names, and then you could have Sam Jackson, a pre-recorded Sam Jackson, call
Samuel
someone.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes, Samuel L. Jackson could call you and say, hey, what's going on, Lindsay? Have you heard about my new movie, Snakes on a Plane? And talks about it and you know, and
it
was like a little customizable.
Yeah.
It was the best. I was like, oh, please do every single movie, please.
It was
do
so
this.
Good. It was really fun. So,
and you could just do it to anybody. It was like a prank call in a box. It was amazing.
That was really fun.
Yeah.
So can the election be over? I'm ready for it to be over.
I mean, if you aren't voting yet, you should.
Well, we're going to go and vote in person.
We're
going to
vote
early in person in New York City. We're going October 28th to the 29th.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do our civic duty and vote. But I don't even know what to say about the state of the world right now and like the president or whatever. Can I tell you my theory is that he's actually very sick, is my theory. I think that he is. No, I would never do that. I'm not happy about him being sick, and I would never wish ill will on anyone, even somebody that I really don't like.
I do.
We are different people.
I hope he survives. We're talking about the president announcing that he has the COVID-19 virus, that he is the most recently named the number one supplier of misinformation about the virus on the planet. And his actions, in my opinion, caused the deaths, preventable deaths of, what were we at, like 210,000 Americans now? That's like mass murderer territory. Like, that's like war crimes territory.
And I'm not disagreeing with you on any of that. But there's just something about me that I just cannot be happy about someone having illness. Like, it's just, I can't celebrate that. I have this feeling, like, based on I was reading a lot of articles in the New York Times last night, mm-hmm. and, like, what I do sometimes is I kind of go down a rabbit hole, and then I zoom out in my brain and, like, kind of try to piece it all together. And for me, when I did that, it felt like, oh, no, he's actually quite sick, and that they didn't want to announce that he was sick, but then they felt like, okay, we have to announce. And then they had said, oh, he's going to stay at the White House. Well, actually, no, you're so sick that you really do need to go to the hospital. Okay, well, we'll go to the hospital, but it's going to be no big deal. And they keep trying to say he's fine, to the point where I think actually he's probably not fine, because they're trying to say he's fine so much mm-hmm. that, and there's so much conflicting information.
Right.
Because this, the person in charge of the staff,
the White House chief of staff.
That's it. The chief of staff he had tried to speak off the record to a group of reporters, and so he would not be named. But then they were able to prove that it was him, because there's video of him going over to that group of reporters saying, oh, I want to talk to you off the record. So they know actually who the source was. And he said, the president is actually quite ill, and we're all very, very concerned. And he had a high fever, and he was having difficulty breathing. Now there's reports saying that he definitely did have oxygen, and now he just got a steroid that they only give to people who are really having a hard time. So I actually think that he's not doing well, and that they're trying to say he's going to be okay because he's in the best care. But I think that it was probably a little scary for him and maybe shook him up a bit. So I don't know. I'm not saying that I want that to happen, everybody has a different theory about what's happening right now, because nobody has like the real information, but that's my theory of what's happening right now.
No, I hope he survives. I feel like we need him to survive, to lose the election. And I feel like October rolled around and suddenly all these people who have been lying, all like the biggest liars in our country, who have been like saying that the virus was a hoax, who is like pushing like anti-masks and supplying all this misinformation about the virus, now suddenly they're all getting sick.
Well, the virus doesn't care, you know.
Yes.
And when I one of the articles I read in the Times was from one of the aides who left her position not too long ago, and then was talking about how difficult it was to be working in the White House, and how it was kind of scary at times because Trump was so anti-mask, and that in order to be somebody that Trump would, you know, interact with or think any kind of positive things about, you had to not wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And it really makes me think of like how the whole situation is so us and them. That is like, oh, well, we're in the situation of, we're in the White House, so like we can't touch us. You know, we're here, we have all the best precautions, but they were using these like quick tests. And anybody who works in the arts knows like any kind of thing that like works really fast is never as good as a thing that works slow. Like you can use a catalyst to make your, you know, resin set faster, but it will be more brittle. It will never be as good. And so, you know, when you have these quick, like 15-minute tests, 1 in 3, I think it was, give you a false negative. And so, I mean, they were using these quick tests like multiple times a day to make sure that, you know, everybody was okay. But it's like, you know, you're actually not like immune to this thing. Nobody is immune to this thing. And I have a lot of mixed feelings about the whole thing. And I mean, like, I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to be happy that somebody is sick. But also it's, I don't know. Just go watch Saturday Night Live. It made me feel a lot better.
There you go. I will be the one to say that it's karma or that it's justice. You know, like, if the people who pushed others to irresponsibly behave in dangerous ways, that it caught up with them too. You know, but being sick is the worst, you know, and I feel for them. You know, it's like I feel for them in the way that I feel for anybody who got really sick with this thing. It's terrible. It's awful. And will this change their behavior? Probably not.
Probably not. That's what has been shown with other world leaders who are difficult, yes, who got the sickness, yeah, and then
Brazil's,
came back from
it. Brazil's president said it was not a big deal. How many Brazilians died, and he got it, and then bounced back and said, nope, it's not a big deal. See, I told you. Told you I beat this thing. And everyone is kind of predicting that that's what our president will do, too. I think the best thing anyone can do right now is vote. Doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on, just vote. I feel like the people who took his directions literally are the ones that maybe are dying the most. We don't know. But it feels like if you really are following like what the president and others like him have been saying about not wearing a mask and not being safe, you're more at risk for dying, and therefore you can't vote in this election, you know. Or if you get really sick, maybe people around you see like, oh, actually, maybe this is a big deal. Who knows? The whole thing is just crazy. And I, like a lot of people, felt like, you know, for a while I was like, oh, these debates are dumb. You know, who needs the debates? They're just like, everyone's already decided who they're voting for. It's not really a debate. It's just sound bites the week that, like, that's the press can use later or the campaigns can use later. It's like C-SPAN, where you have an empty congressional hall and one person in front of a camera debating, but really they're just like talking so they can use it later for their constituents. And it feels like... But I was watching after the debates were done, I was feeling like pretty jovial about them, actually. I was like, I want to see another one, because I want to see somebody in the room with our current president tell him to shut up. That felt great. And to call him a clown and other things without being super terrible, without being like the president's, like, in-your-face, like, bully. You know, I feel like...
Well, it's nice to have, like, somebody finally not get trounced
up
on
to him.
Yeah.
At last.
Like, yes.
Hillary, come on. Like, 4 years ago, Hillary, you should have stood up to him.
You know what, though? We didn't know how, like, I think that people who are really nice didn't know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, too, is that, you know, he's been given a permission slip this whole time to basically do whatever he wants because there are no repercussions. Mm. There have been really no repercussions for him in terms of, like, being a jerk, you know, being mean, or, you know, not denouncing white supremacy. Like, what are the repercussions of that? Nothing, you know. And I can go back to my childhood and how I was raised as, like, in a white right-wing conservative family and kind of think through, like, what his thought process is and why he would or would not say something. Do I think that he's actually a white supremacist? I don't know. Honestly, I don't know that I think that, but I do think that he's, like, a libertarian in the sense that he, like, believes that everyone should be allowed to believe what they want to believe, to the point where you're including very evil people, you know?
I thought he misspoke, actually. It felt like a senior moment where they're like, hey, can you denounce white supremacist? And he's like, what did you say?
I don't know.
And they're like, can you tell him to stand?
He was given an opportunity to say it point blank, and he didn't, and then he still didn't in the following days. So, no, that he just said, like, stand down and stand by. Like, you know, which I think probably was a misspeak on his part. He didn't mean to say specifically that, but unfortunately that just becomes a rallying cry for them. Yeah. Because he couldn't just say, like, hatred is evil and any group that supports hatred I don't support. Like, he can't say that because it's against his platform, and his platform is whatever you want to do as long as it's not against the law.
And I think it's more just whatever you want to do as long as it gets me and my friends rich.
Well, that too. But I mean, I, you know, I I do try to see things from the other point of view, and I think that's the curse of being a highly empathetic person combined with somebody who was raised as a right-wing conservative thinker. So I don't believe that stuff. I mean, it's like growing up in a cult almost. Like, you know, you're taught this is the way it is, and then you realize, oh, there's whole other way. But then that initial way that you were raised, when your brain is like young and sensitive and like, you know, making all of its like ways of how like synapses, like mm-hmm. it's still in there, you know. So when I hear him talking, like, I know that rhetoric, I know all of that stuff, so that's messed up and that's never leaving. But it's hard. I'm just ready for all this to be done. I just want it to be done. I want all of this to be over. I want to be back in our house. I want you to be performing again. I want the kids to be in school. Like, I mean, I'm so grateful to be here. We haven't even done our shout out to Springville Center for the Arts. We're so grateful to have our residency through Springville Center for the Arts. But I know that there are people who are watching or listening to this right now who can relate and just want it all to be over. Like, I feel like, you know, we did a really great job of like digging deep, pulling through, you know, getting what needed to get done. And now I'm feeling like, okay, can it be done now? Can we be done being brave? No, we still have to be brave and like dig deep and like do all of the hard things still.
I will tell you, I can be pretty lazy sometimes, but you can't be lazy about your own safety. And I see so many people walking around without a mask or taking their mask off immediately when they come out of the store. And putting it away like it doesn't matter, and I just feel like, come on, people, like, we can do better, you know? Like, I haven't felt patriotic since I learned to think for myself, but like, I enjoy the people that and the culture of Western New York, you know? Like, they're pretty straight shooters. And I feel like, come on, Western New York. Come on, like, our little section of the state, you know, or, like, our little section of Queens.
But it's all from the top down, because it was never seen as a patriotic move to wear masks. It was never seen as something that was a unifying, doesn't matter what you believe thing. It was never presented as that. It was always presented as political. And I'm not saying that I want it to be done because I want to relax and like be lazy. I'm ready for the fever dream of whatever has been happening for the last 6 months to be over. That's what I'm ready to wake up, because I'm still feeling like I wake up and I'm like, right, we're here, still here every day, still here, you know, and that's hard. It's hard.
I get it. But I mean, I feel like we're tasting a little bit of what it's like to be a refugee, like an actual refugee, you know? And I feel like we can take a lot more.
We could. Like, I'm just tired.
We still got a lot of courage.
Yes.
And we got a lot of bravery. We got a lot of stamina in here. And it doesn't take much to be safe.
And we're so lucky and so grateful. I just wanted to complain for a minute about it.
And we're totally privileged, you know, like we're privileged to still have parents with a house that could, you know, like a place of refuge, so we didn't have to just stick it out in our New York City apartment. And we, you know, like we can still survive, you know, like not everybody can. So for the people who can, for the people with who feel like they can have bravery and they can have stamina and you have survival, like you have enough money to make it, wear your masks, please. Like, come on. If you have all those things, if you feel like you're with it and you can survive this, then help everybody and yourself out and make this go quicker, because everyone's just dragging their heels, and it's going to be longer and longer and longer and longer if all Americans don't, you know, help out.
But Chad, I have a feeling that like we're preaching to the choir here, because probably everybody who watches this and listens to this podcast,
I just have to say that out loud.
Yeah, of course.
You know, it's like I don't think about that stuff all the time.
Yeah,
this is just rolling out of me right now, and I feel passionately about that, and you know, like maybe this is like all week I've just had this like, you know, kind of like happening, like so many people without masks, debates, and then finally you talk about it. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a little bit like therapy. Like, what's going on with you this week?
I never know what we're gonna talk about when we start these episodes.
But it's affected us and our company and our family in a huge way. But we had the resources to stick it out, and we had the support to stick it out, and you know, and the elbow grease to stick it out. So if everybody could, with those things also, could just get on board with helping out others, and like, we would be done.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I also want to take a moment. Thank you for sharing all of that.
Sure.
And I agree, but I also want to take a moment. Every week we always say that if you're having a hard time, if you're not sure that you want to see the sun tomorrow, then you need to take a moment and call somebody get in touch somehow with somebody that might be able to help you. Because I know that mental illness is, our mental hygiene is just as important as, food and shelter. And you need to make sure that you're taking care of yourself. So if you're feeling like things aren't going right, or if you're, taken to doing things more full on regularly than maybe is okay for you and your body, then, you know, check yourself, talk to somebody, and, make sure you take care of yourself, because we care about you and we want you to see the sun tomorrow. And, we're going to get through this. So I keep telling myself we're going to get through this, but it's long, and it's going to be a long journey, and it'll probably be another 6 months. But I think when you're having a hard time, it makes it harder for me to like dig deep and like be okay. Because then it just feels like, oh, I want to have a hard time too. Let's all have a hard time. This sucks, you know?
Sorry.
It's okay. I mean, you're allowed to have a hard time. And I need to be okay with that. But it just makes it harder for me to, you know, like be okay for everybody else, right? Because our kids need us to be okay too.
There's some emotional labor that has to happen when you're a parent. You can't just lose it in front of your kids. You should not lose it in front of your kids, because it's going to affect them. If not like right now, like down the line. And sometimes I lose it. Like last night, our son got really upset.
Yeah.
And whenever our kids get upset, it makes me really upset. Like 6-year-old Chad just wants to, like I remember what it was like, what that felt like, and I'll do anything to stop them from feeling that, you know, including, you know, just like pacing and saying things I would not normally say, just so it can just be over. But that's just my goal, is just for it to be over, so they can stop being so upset. And last night after it was done, when you and Finn had finished, there was a control fight about dinner, because it's one of the things that kids, you know, a control point is always going to happen over, like, food or clothes or responsibilities or going to school or something. He came over to me and he said, "Daddy, I'm not upset anymore." Mm-hmm. Because I had said something about, you know, out loud about, like, I just don't want him to be upset anymore, you know? And I think that in some way he probably internalized that to be like, I'm doing something wrong, you know? Which is like, every time that happens, it just makes me feel like, oh man, I don't have to say anything, you know, like I should have just left or gone somewhere else or done something else. But like, because I said something, like your words always come back to haunt you. Mm-hmm. So that's my regret of the week. How's that for a parenting podcast? Saying something to you in front of our kids that will probably come back in some form, or was internalized in some form. And it's just like,
it's okay. I mean, I get it. And It's all stressful. That's the thing. It's like it's all hard, and then that's part of why we're out here as well, is because we have this amazing support system of your parents who have been great and really, really helpful with so much stuff. So it would be even harder if we didn't have that. And we're so thankful for that. And it's been an hour and a half, so we should probably say goodbye. Yeah.
Thank you to everybody.
You're listens. A great dad, thank, by the way. I need to say that
you're a great mom.
Publicly. Look, we're hugging, guys. Everything's okay.
Thanks.
Leif and Finn in the future who are watching this and wondering how weird your parents really were.
Thanks, Riobina, for the Lord of the Rings quote.
Yeah. It's a good one.
It felt like protesting against stuff was, you know, the fight of our generation before. Now it's just surviving this, you know, like the virus and the whole economic upturn is the fight, literal fight of our generation.
I believe the children are our future. Give them love and let them lead the way.
Yeah. And I told I told our under son that he older son that he can't play Fortnite.
Yep. That's right. And that's okay. He gets to play a lot of other things.
That's right. But I'm purposely keeping him away from those awful toxic PvP communities for as long as possible.
There's no need for that.
As long as possible. 7-year-old doesn't need to be called any of those terrible names, even if it's just in chat. Don't believe what our cousin says. He's going to get exposed to the awfulness of the internet that way.
No, well, he'll have plenty of time to be exposed to whatever game is going to be popular at the time that he's ready for that.
Yeah, when he's a teenager.
And that might not be Fortnite, so it will be something else. And then he will be of age to filter through all of that. Yeah.
All I'm saying is thank goodness Splatoon doesn't have voice chat. Because, geez, our kids would have been yelled at so hard when they were just learning the game.
Oh, yeah.
As you know, get on the mongoose. Get on the mongoose.
That was me learning Halo.
Yeah, we play this great Halo mod called Rocket Race. somebody got really frustrated with you once.
I couldn't figure it's to my buttons. Anyway, we appreciate you all watching the show today. It's another week
in the can,
I guess. Ba-boom. You would say. Be sure to tune in. October 15th is when the new podcast for Sesame Street launches.
Oh yeah.
Featuring me as Foley, the host. So that's exciting. So I just want to put a plug in that in for that. That's going to be on Audible. So make sure that you tune in to Audible on October 15th. I think there's a 30-day free trial. So if you're not an Audible member, you can join just to hear me being fun and silly.
Well, I mean, I think that the work that we've done and that we're doing, and then that specifically is just like, it's not about anything stressful. You lose yourself to 15 minutes of just pure joy and having
fun. It's super
fun.
Yeah. And, you know, I just really want people to hear it. I'm excited to hear what you all think.
Yay.
Right. So thank you all so much for tuning in. We are the Puppet Parent Podcast. I'm Z.
I'm Chad.
And we will see you next week.
Okay.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.